Cosmic Backstage Capital.
Everyone, thanks for joining us for another episode of the Bootstrap VC, a backstage podcast. I'm Greer, and with me today is the founder of a sexual education and wellness company and a member of the Backstage 100. Thanks for coming on, and please introduce yourself.
Hey everyone, this is Andrea Barica. I am the CEO and founder of O School. Like Greer said, we help people all over the world learn about sex and pleasure, and we hope to become a really safe and trusted brand in between Planned Parenthood and Pornhub. That's a big reason why I got into this, and I'm excited to be here and chat with you.
I'm super glad to have you on. Like I was saying before we pressed record, my first introduction to you was at Hustle House at South by Southwest in 2018, and you came up on stage in front of this room of all kinds of folks across the tech landscape, and you had like a model clitoris, I guess is what we'd call it.
I did. I bring my 3D printed clit everywhere I go. I start every VC meeting I've ever raised money in by asking an investor if they can recognize the model. And to this date, pretty much no one has correctly been able to identify it. I urge any listener who is like, what do you mean? The clitoris is just the little button. It's not. It's a 10, on average, 10 centimeter amazingly powerful organ in the human body. And there's bulbs and wings, and medical doctors can't identify it. Actually, at that South by Southwest event, two medical doctors came up to me and were so humble to admit they weren't able to identify it.
That's amazing. Like, that's how you know the work you're doing is super important, because people that are supposed to be experts have no clue. Okay, so, like many of our portfolio companies, your journey as a founder is like deeply rooted in your upbringing and your life story before even thinking about working. So could you shed some light on like how O School started, but even way back then?
Absolutely. I grew up in a Filipino American Catholic traditional family. My mom was 7 months pregnant with me when she came to the United States. So I am a child of immigrants. And growing up, I never thought that I would ever work in tech, even though my dad, he actually, after graduating from college, when I was 5 years old, before that, he was at UPS and McDonald's. Like, my dad really, came to this country with nothing and built himself up. And so my dad, after graduating from college, ended up working, for a tech company, which ended up leading to him working at Intel for many years. He's still at Intel to this day. And the funny story is that he always thought my little brother would go into tech. And so he taught him how to build computers. And I kind of had my own interest. I was, really into activism and linguistics. And so I was on a different path. And turns out, I was graduating from college after some years working on my own projects. And I get a call one day from my freshman roommate in college who just got into Y Combinator. And at this point in time, I'm a linguistics major. I was, doing a bunch of activism and projects, but I never, ever thought of myself working in tech. And she says, I got into Y Combinator. I want you to move to Mountain View and build this company as my right-hand person. And it was so funny to me because at the time, Jess, who was a computer science major, had a huge network, great entrepreneurship network. And I was so curious. I was like, why do you want me? And the funny thing is she said, you don't know what's going on. Warren Buffett said that I need someone that lacks the institutional imperative and doesn't know what's going on. And you're perfect. I trust you. And I dropped everything. I completely dropped my path to go move to China and be a linguist. And I ended up building accounting software for 4 years. It completely changed my life, changed the trajectory of my life. I joined Jess and we started building Indonero, which was at the time a accounting software and tax platform where small businesses could get help building their companies by, having us solve all of their back office problems. And that's what I did for a while. And from there, found myself in love with building things, learned so much. And yeah, I ended up going into venture next, but that's how it all started.
So yeah, that's super interesting. I think for me, like, I've been interviewing headliners for a little while now. And to my knowledge, you're the first person I've interviewed that has experience in venture. So That's just a really unique perspective to have as an entrepreneur now, but someone who's been a partner before at a really reputable institution and company before. But I want to get back to like old school and the problem that you're, you know, working to solve every day. And so I want to know from your perspective, like what's wrong with the way sex is currently being taught to young people?
Absolutely. So to bring it back, you know, while I was a venture partner at 500 startups, I was helping lead deals. I became obsessed with this problem of why are there no companies or brands in between Planned Parenthood and Pornhub? Like there really is this massive gap. I personally was going through a lot of problems myself. Again, I grew up Filipino Catholic. I had a lot of issues around sexuality. I was in the closet till my mid-20s. You know, all of these things were kind of happening for me. And it was kind of ironic, right? I was working in an internet technology world and I was investing in technology companies and I couldn't find solutions that were online. It was in person. I was getting my healing in in-person situations. And it was really at 500 Startups where I started to research this space and become obsessed with this problem. And I started building prototypes there to try to answer this question of like, what would it look like if when young people or anyone really had problems with sexuality, that they had a place they could go? Because not only do we not get, you know, sex ed in schools, like right now in the United States, fewer than 50% of high schools are offering any sex ed. And 75% of the programs that are offering sex ed are abstinence only until marriage, which we know, you know, does not help reduce the rate of STIs. It does not help like teen pregnancy. It's just proven not to work. But you know, this is the state of the country. At the same time, access to porn through mobile phones is at an all-time high. So the de facto sex ed in the world is really porn right now, if you look at how people are shaping their sexual perspectives. And then even aside from that, when people try to go to YouTube or Reddit or different online forums, women, people of color, LGBTQ folks are you know, really at a high risk of harassment and abuse. So nowhere did I see solutions to this that were at scale and that really could like change this. And so that's why I started building O-School, and we've done lots of different changes of the, you know, of how we've done it. But the core vision for us is everyone in the world should have access to the best education about their bodies, anatomy, pleasure, sexuality, dating, in a really non-judgmental way.
All right, great. So how do you communicate with folks looking to learn more about sex and sexuality and prevention and stuff like that?
Yeah, we have content all over the site, that's from articles to videos that we have developed. We have custom animations and GIFs that are around, you know, pleasure and anatomy. And then we also have live streams and we have live chat so that people can, you know, talk to us directly. And it's all around being an engaging and non-judgmental place for people.
Okay, so you said you do live Q&As, and we obviously talked about like the stats in terms of the lack of sex education. So you've been doing these for a while. Like, what's the one question that you still get that you're like, and I realize that you want to be like non-judgmental, but what's like the one question that you get sometimes and you're like, how do people just not know this?
Oh my goodness, there's so many. So I would say I've done a college tour as well where I've spoken to thousands of college students. And the questions really range from the most basic, right, to where does pee come out? And what, you know, where is my vagina? Like, and I don't judge these because I personally had built two companies myself before really understanding my own body. Like, it wasn't until O-School that I learned about the clitoris. It really was late in life that I learned myself. So that's where the non-judgment comes from. Like, I didn't know. I was on the outside, looked really successful, but I really didn't understand my body or the things that I wanted. And so, you know, we get the most basic questions from people of all ages. Like, there is not one age where, you know, I would say our sex education is done. Everything is always changing. I will say that sometimes we get questions that are like, you know, I was taught that masturbation will give me erectile dysfunction, or I was taught that masturbation is a sin. You know, there's a lot of unlearning that we get because people don't feel, you know, comfortable with their bodies or sex because of the messages they've been given. And then we get, you know, the most common question that we get are around just some version of, am I normal? Is it okay that I like this? Like, people really need to hear that their desires are okay. The things that they want, as long as it involves consenting adults, are okay. And so we deal with a lot of these types of basic, but also really like really difficult questions because of the kind of the world that we've all been brought up in. There's a lot of shame and fear around sex.
All right. So speaking of which, that leads me to my next question, which is, why do you think it's imperative for people to understand sex and their sexuality, especially in the face of like the Me Too and Why I Didn't Report movements? I saw that you had a Twitter thread about that like about a week ago, and I definitely wanted to highlight that here.
Absolutely. I don't think there's a time in history that's more important that we start building a culture of more sexual respect for everyone. And, you know, it's sad, but I'm not surprised at the state of the world and how little people really understand or respect bodily autonomy. Like because we really haven't educated anyone about this, you know, like even from the youngest ages, we don't teach, you know, young children that their bodies belong to them. And so learning about sex and learning about bodies, it's not just about sex. It's not just about, you know, pleasure. It's about agency. When you don't teach someone about them, their own bodies, and you don't teach them that it belongs to them, you know, these are where these problems are coming from. And so we believe a lot in teaching about consent, but, you know, you can't teach about consent without teaching about pleasure, masturbation, like all these really important topics, because they're all related to, you know, making sure that people know that they can ask for what they want, they can say no to what they don't want, and that everyone's bodily autonomy is so important to respect, right? So that's where that comes from. And I think that this is so important, not just for, you know, it's so important for wellness, but also, you know, this connects to people's confidence at work, their relationships. You know, this is part of a larger movement for like a happier, healthier, like better, more equitable world. And, you know, right now, access to information about sex and pleasure really depends on where you're born. And I think there's a massive problem with that, and why we see so many kind of cultural evidence that there is a broken culture around sex and consent. I don't know a time in history that it's not more obvious than right now.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And thank you. Even if you weren't a backstage headliner, I think what you're doing is really important. And I hope all the listeners use O School, because sexual agency is definitely something that needs to be taught to people at a very, very early age when they start discovering themselves.
And this is a huge business, Greer. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but like people, you know, especially being a former investor myself, what's shocking to me is like there's the obvious social impact side of what we do. And also there's a $122 billion sexual wellness industry that's projected by 2026. And like so few people in the space that are going after it, or that are funded to go after it, or that people feel, you know, that they can start these businesses because of all the stigma and shame. And so it's like, it's a double whammy for me personally, because it's such also just a massive underserved opportunity. People are struggling with their sexuality. People need help figuring this out, and there's just not anything out there for them.
I'm really glad that you brought that up, because that was kind of perfect segue. So, you know, you've been an investor before. So two things. One, I want to know, like, what's been your biggest challenge now as a founder? And then second, right, like you're going into rooms now as a founder, and maybe this is your challenge, but you're going into rooms now as a founder looking to raise money, but sex is still a taboo topic in this country. I mean, even though like in some ways we know everyone's having it, it's just still not like widely discussed. And so, you know, when you go to a room with the 3D printed clitoris, like what's been the reaction? What's that been like? And then also, right, we know that VCs, traditionally, most of them are men. And then here you come, this queer woman of color with a 3D printed clitoris. Like, what's the reception been like?
Yeah, it's definitely been interesting. You know, it's like a hard mode on a video game. You're like, okay, queer woman of color. Okay, come from a low income background. Like, let's add, you know, space that's not been traditionally funded ever in VC. Like, let's see. And so it was really interesting, especially because I come from accounting software. A lot of the first investors I went to were people who had funded in Dinero, my first company. And so a lot of them were like, oh, like, tell us about your next venture. Like, we're really excited. And, you know, I would say, like, yeah, I want to build a company that's going to help people learn about sex and pleasure. It was, it was really hard for people. And in the beginning, I definitely think that people were really, really just freaked out and just wouldn't take meetings. And it's interesting, right? Because like I led deals myself. I worked with many VCs. And so it was really clear and obvious who believed in it. And it's not a thing you would put on your AngelList profile, like if you're open-minded about this stuff. So it took a lot of using my access to different investors and learning like through word of mouth, like, oh, that investor is really open-minded, or that invest, you know, those are the ones that will help you. And I was so lucky. Like I did have a lot of early backers. Arlen was one of them. Monique Woodard, who I worked with at 500, a lot of my 500 startups colleagues backed me and supported me early. And it allowed me to show people the opportunity and develop this story. And so I would say that I have seen the VC community open up even in the last 12 months. I will say that raising from institutional funds, when I first started O School, a lot of people said it was impossible. They said, oh no, LPAs, like LP agreements, you can't do this. Like they're not allowed to. And so for people who don't know, like, you know, I understand because of 500 startups, a lot of like what people don't know is investors have bosses too. And those are their LPs, their limited partners. So what I understood was a lot of the conversations I've had with investors is like, okay, like just give it to me straight. Like, will this even be possible for you and your fund? And the ones that I really appreciated were the ones that are like, no, we've got some Catholic LPs. This will never fly. And I had that experience a few times and it saved me time. What I also did was I made relationships. I knew that some people really had to know me, had to know my vision, and had to understand my values. And so it was a long game to build it. But I also understood kind of the ins and outs of that so that, you know, I wasn't wasting time going after funds that it wouldn't be possible. But I will say that we have had some institutional investments and interest. I, at one point, just started going to Series A investors and just would call up great investors and say, look, would you ever lead an A? Like, if I blew it out of the water in metrics, if I blew it out of the water in engagement, and I had like a great business model, like, would you back it? And what gave me confidence is a lot of people were like, yeah, you prove it. You come to town. Like, I'll look at it. I'll take it to my team. And so to founders out there that are in spaces that, you know, are maybe a little bit edgier, like cannabis, crypto, these spaces come to mind as well. Back in the day with sex tech, you know, and femtech, these industries, like I just started building relationships with downstream capital so that when I got to earlier stage investors, I could say, hey, you know, the financing risk is real, but like, look, I just de-risked it. You can call all these VCs. They will look at this. And, you know, you just have to be confident that I can get over the execution risk and do this. And because I'm an experienced entrepreneur, I've done this a few times, I was able to get over some of those. And so, yeah, I've been, the hardest part of building this business is building the business, right? Like the financing, I never worried too much about it. Because it's a thing that I'm like, we can do this. I know that if we build a great business, speak to our customers, like that's the hard part. Like building a sex business that reaches Kansan women and, you know, people who grew up really being afraid of sex, like that's the challenge that keeps me up at night. From the fundraising perspective, like I've actually found that it's fun and it's binary, meaning people either love it and want to back it or they hate it and would never touch it. And actually as a founder, I love that. That makes it really easy for me to figure out who's on our side, who's in our corner, who's rooting for us, and who's going to be stuck in the dark ages. You know, that's how I go about it.
Yeah, that's very cool. And I think all of what you just said is very useful for any entrepreneur that has a business that isn't so traditional or might give investors a little pause. So thanks for sharing that for sure. So what's next for O School?
Oh, we are growing. We are, you know, closing around right now. So I'm in the middle of raising a pre-seed round. It's going well, and I'm really happy about that. And we are growing. We're expanding our team and just growing the community. Like we've figured out, like we're really confident. We've got great content. Mashable just called us the Harvard of sex ed, which is really cool for the team. Launched a new website. Everyone should go check it out. We had a great product hunt launch a couple weeks ago. And so now it's time to really grow and to reach more people. And so the whole team is laser focused on that. And I'm really excited to execute alongside them when the fundraising is closed in a few weeks. So, and I'm also like hiring and going through that. I mean, that's harder. I'm also always more worried about recruiting than I am fundraising. There are lots of VCs finding really amazing people who believe in your values and can execute alongside you for the long haul. Like I'm really excited about that. So,
all right. So if people, you know, I don't know what positions you're hiring for, but if people want to inquire, where could they do that?
Oh, yeah. They should email us at hello@o.school. Check us out. They can find me on Twitter. I'm A. Barica. And yeah, we're hiring definitely more on the growth and operation, the community, and like all these kinds of things are our focus right now. And yeah, I'd love to talk to more people. And as a team, you know, we're led by a lot of people with different lived experiences, and I want to keep expanding that.
That's super cool. So yeah, if you guys want to be at the forefront of, I would say O-School is going to be a movement, definitely follow up with Andrea. Well, Andrea, we're super happy to have you in the Backstage portfolio. O-School is definitely going to revolutionize the sexual education and wellness space. And continued good luck to you. It's a trying industry, but if anyone can do it, it's you.
I appreciate that, Greer. And Backstage has definitely been a supportive force for me, and I'm so proud to be part of the community.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Andrea.
Thank you.
Show notes and music credits can be found at backstagecapital.com/podcast. Go follow Greer on Twitter and Instagram at Greer and Ganga. That's GREERENGONGA. Huge thank you to all the founders who applied to Backstage Accelerator. We've been so impressed with the companies for our first cohorts. Whether or not you made it to the final selection stages, give yourself credit for showing up and being seen. We're looking forward to staying in touch with all of you. If you want to follow along with our Accelerator cities, check out the show notes for Twitter and Instagram links. They each have their own voice, but so far they're all fun, full of helpful advice for founders, and they really care deeply about the ecosystems they're working to grow. Catch you on the flippity flip. Thanks for listening to the Bootstrap VC.